Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to the launch of Scotland the Brief Book and to our new national independence campaign, Believe in Scotland. It has oft been said that if the economic arguments for an independent Scotland had been as strong as the grassroots independence movement, we would have won Scottish independence in 2014. This is something that Business for Scotland has worked tirelessly to resolve ever since, and it has not been easy, as there has been no reliable data for Scotland. We should not underestimate the significance of not having a reliable grasp of our economy. I sit on the board of one of Scotland's enterprise agencies, and I remember a presentation by another government agency about Scotland's exports. After the presentation, we scratched our heads and questioned, are you sure these are the correct figures? Do they include everything? The agency said they'd get back to us and look into it. I find this quite incredible. If our Scottish government agencies don't have accurate data, then how can we as boards make informed decisions? Some may argue that the void of accurate economic information was a systematic attempt by the powers that be to mask Scotland's success, to hide the truth, a void which could be filled with propaganda. I believe that in 2014, many people wanted independence, but were too scared to vote for it, believing the myth that we were too wee, too poor, and too stupid. But no longer. Please welcome to the floor the brainchild of Business for Scotland, Gordon McIntyre-Kemp.
Thank you very much, Ailsa. Yeah, we're here tonight to actually launch our book, the Scotland Debrief. We call it the Maxi, and it actually is about four or five times the amount of data that we've got in the mini book, which hopefully many of you have had a read. How many of you have actually read the mini? Nice one. Thank you very much. The key difference here is, with all the different information, is actually that if you turn to the back of the book, if you've got one, there's actually 400 sources. Every single fact that we refer to is actually linked in a source, which means that you can look up everything and check that we are correct on absolutely everything we say. It is a resource on Scotland's economy that has never existed before, and that's what we've basically been focusing on for the last couple of years. Now, Business for Scotland, you'll know what we did in 2014. We campaigned for independence. We didn't write the economic case for independence, but we talked about it as much as we could, and we made our own case for independence, which was listened to in one or two leading independence campaigners in 2014. People at the very top of the independence campaign told us that the independence vote wouldn't have got out of the 40s if it wasn't for Business for Scotland, and as far as I'm concerned, that's an achievement of my lifetime so far, but I want to go one better next time. Business for Scotland is judged on one thing. This is what we try to do. We try to encourage belief in Scotland's economy. And last year, for the first time, the amount of people in Scotland that believe Scotland would be better off as an independent nation than they would be as part of the UK changed. Now, more people believe we'll be better off as an independent country. And that is directly related to the movement in the yes vote. What we actually have found through research is that 77% of Scottish people would quite like independence and would vote for independence if they thought Scotland would be better off because of it. We'd be miles better off if we voted for independence. So we just need to convince them of that and give them the facts they need. We're probably best known for our website, and our website has lots of articles in there. Scotland Debrief articles, yes, but we do opinions and political articles as well, and you'll see the quiz there in the middle, which has been incredibly successful. The website, as we are speaking, probably already has just passed a fairly major milestone, which isn't bad for a niche economics blog about Scotland. Any blog about Scotland, frankly. But we don't just do that. We are an economics consultancy. We're a lobbying firm. We have quite a decent-sized staff as well, which I'll introduce you to in a minute. We put on events across Scotland where we talk to businesses. We even do events. We're doing one soon in London to about 100 business people who have business interests in Scotland. And we explain to them what the economic case for independence is. This is our annual dinner. We hold it every year. It's about 350 people. And the last year it was in the Hilton as well. So we actually run one of the biggest business dinners of the entire year. How many of you been to the business dinner? Quite a few. Good stuff. Good stuff. Tickets on sale next month. We also have the Saltire Club, which is a lunch club where leading independent supporters who run businesses meet with ministers, experts, polling experts, etc. on a monthly basis. We look to influence ministers and politicians with our thinking right across. The leaders of every single party, pro-independence party in Scotland, have spoken several times at these, so have various ministers. Derek Mackay is speaking at the one in February to the Saltire members that are here. We make headlines. We've actually had about 25 front pages from our research. This was one in 2017, one of my favourites, because we got the entire splash. And you know, the truth is getting out there, and the work we do does make the papers, and actually has convinced a lot of people in Scotland, especially our European referendum research, convinced a lot of people to vote Remain in Scotland. So as you can see, it's quite a decent concern to actually do all the work that we do. We have the resources, we have offices, and we also have, in our office, we have the Scottish Independence Foundation. We give them a free office so that they can operate and help all the grassroots movement as well. So Scotland Debrief. It's a book with over 400 facts. It tells anybody anything they want to know, pretty much everything you'd ever want to know about the Scottish economy. If you've read it and you think there's something we haven't covered, tell us. It will be in the second edition, because it will just keep on improving and improving. Essentially, the idea of Scotland Debrief is that anyone who reads that, or indeed the shorter version, becomes bulletproof to scaremongering. When someone says, oh, but how are we going to afford the pensions? It seems like a reasonable question to actually ask until you actually read the section on pensions in here and you realise we've got the worst pensions in Europe. And actually, it's not that we can't afford them in the UK, it's that the UK doesn't value pensioners. You know, so that sort of information in there switches people, and they actually think that's a different way to look at things, and it's backed up with facts. Sourced facts. So we thought, let's take a look at Scotland's economy. What can we actually see in Scotland? What could be the problems that would cause this so-called deficit, the reason that people wonder whether or not we actually can be an independent nation? And actually what we found was that, and the UK government's own Office of National Statistics published a report that proved that Scotland has 34% of the UK's natural wealth with only 8% of its population, 8.4% of its population. If you actually look at the fantastic resources we've got, not just oil and gas, clearly 96% of the UK's crude oil and 63% of its natural gas, but if you look also at the renewables, 25% of Europe's onshore wind resources and 25% of Europe's tidal energy resources and 10% of Europe's wave power potential, you actually realise that we've got lucky twice in the North Sea. Well, Westminster messed up the first opportunity, and the second opportunity is something we can't afford to miss, because in case you haven't noticed, the world is on fire right now. Quite usefully, we have 90% of the fresh water in the UK, a commodity in short supply in London and the South East. For industry, that's an important factor. So we're naturally wealthy. We're far more naturally wealthy than the rest of the UK. So we thought, okay, let's have a look at, is there a problem with trade? Is there a problem with exporting? And actually what we found is that an independent Scotland would actually be an exporting powerhouse. Not only does our oil and gas supply chain exports almost match our actual oil and gas exports, but right across the board, food and drink, whiskey, energy, we actually are a major exporter. And if you actually then compare other nations, which we do throughout the book in a lot of different areas, and you actually compare other nations of a similar size in Northern and Western Europe, you actually find that Scotland, in terms of exporting, performs very well. And now some of you can't necessarily see the bottom of this here, but you can see that's the UK's export figures. That's not the Union Jack. We've removed Scotland from it. That's why it looks like that. but Scotland actually exports more than double per head of the rest of the UK without Scotland. More than double. So we're actually a major exporter. In fact, if you actually look at the trade statistics, and I echo what Ailsa was saying, I remember one of our researchers was actually given the job of delving deep into the export statistics, and after about 2 days, he looked at me from his computer, and he said, "How's that coming with that? Have you found that data yet?" And he said, "Do you know, it's almost as if they don't want us to find the information." I said, "Welcome to my world." But basically, one of the things we do absolutely know is that Scotland, every year since records have been kept, has had a positive trade surplus in goods. And you can see that although our Northern Ireland has this year maybe once or twice managed a trade surplus, England has one of the world's worst trade surpluses. So minus 134 billion in goods every year. It can't support itself. It can't feed itself, it doesn't have enough energy, it buys everything in from abroad, which means their entire economy is based on open borders and trade agreements. Let's hope nobody does anything stupid like leaving the EU. We're not going to. So let's take a look at innovation. Well, there's a productivity slowdown in right across all the Western world, but there's a productivity slowdown in the UK in particular. So really, is Scotland innovative? And you know, we hear about the whas like us, and we invented penicillin and television and radio and radar and tarmacadam, and yeah, it goes on and on. Marmalade, and that's not really that innovative, but it might be. But it's good. And all of these sort of things. But actually, what have we done recently? And this is where I expected to find bad news, and I actually found fantastic news. Scotland is actually a leading innovative nation. It is, however, one of the greatest growth opportunities we've got is to spend more money on innovation, but the UK doesn't spend on innovation, unless it's fintech, possibly. So basically, one of the things I found that I thought was fascinating is that in Glasgow is the biggest European city in terms of making satellites. We've got one of the biggest space sectors. In Glasgow, there are actually 70 satellites made every single year. You know, these sort of stats, right through the entire book, you find these interesting surprises. Scotland's digital economy, if you're going to do the quiz at some point, remember this fact, Scotland's digital economy generates 12,800 jobs, professional jobs every year for IT people. Well, yeah, how are we going to fill that? Because at the moment, half of them have to come from the EU. You know, so there's one of our fastest growing industries is under threat from Brexit. Well, what's left? You know, is it us? Is it the Scottish people? Are we too stupid? We know the sort of the old trope. Well, actually, no. If you look at the top left there, we're actually the most highly qualified people in the whole of Europe. 47% of the people of Scotland, not Scottish people per se, but the people of Scotland, all walks of life and all nationalities, have university, college, or vocational qualifications, which is 5% above the UK and is 16% above the EU average. So clearly we're smart enough and qualified enough, but we don't necessarily have the highest qualified jobs, especially for our young people to do, because our economy is held back by not actually being an independent nation. I looked at, we as a team looked at dozens and dozens of sectors. We kept on finding new sectors that were actually billions of pounds of turnover, that had fast growth, that were highly innovative, etc. And we put all the sectors in the book, and you can actually see the economic facts and the growth stats, etc., for sector after sector. And you begin to realise that I've picked whiskey here, which is an interesting one because it's about 20% of all of the UK's food and drink exports are actually just bottles of whiskey. There's 41 bottles of whiskey every second are exported from Scotland. And by the way, it doesn't matter what port they go for. If it's Scotch, it's considered to be a Scottish export. Get your economic stats from Business of Scotland, not from the internet. Well, not from Facebook. And so basically, I do hope they're still leaving enough for me though. But looking at whiskey, I could have put up 10, 12, 13, 14 different sectors that are all performing extremely well. So is it all about oil? That's the sort of thing, oh, without oil, et cetera, et cetera. Well, there's a couple of things to notice here. First of all, the oil price crashed more than anyone ever in their worst nightmares thought it would. And our economy didn't go into recession, it continued to grow. Our onshore revenues grew faster than the year before, and our economy grew as well overall. including oil and gas. So the worst case scenario didn't crash the economy, didn't put it into recession. Well, the UK is actually 33% dependent on business services and finance. What happened when that crashed in 2007? Yeah, one of us is over-dependent on one particular sector, and it's not Scotland and oil. So only 9% of our GDP is dependent on the oil and gas sector. But if you actually look at Norway, it's about 18%, and so it's not actually about over-dependency. That's not risk. You manage the risk properly, it works in your favour. So we took a look at other countries that have, the ones in Western and Northern Europe, we've got 17 benchmark countries throughout the book that we refer to, and we looked at the ones with the closest population, and actually there's several countries, independent countries, that are quite close to us, and also, including two of our nearest neighbours, who are of the same sort of population size. You can see hovering between 4.8 million to 5.8 million, so the other two slightly larger, Denmark and Finland, and then Norway and Ireland, and then we looked at the size of their economies, because they don't have the broad shoulders of the UK to help them out. Wait, something's gone wrong. Yeah, so basically, how come Ireland, which was called a few years ago by the same people who said Scotland didn't have enough money to become independent, it was called a basket case economy, how come Ireland with 600,000 less people looks about 120 billion pounds larger economy than Scotland's? When Ireland doesn't have any of those assets that I've just explained to you or anywhere near our natural wealth, how come? That's the question that just kept on burning into my mind as we started building and building this research. How come something clearly doesn't add up? So what we found was that there's several good reasons. One is, and these are referred to in the book, one of them is quite straightforward, Westminster economic incompetence. Let's look at small independent Norway, and they, when this is figures from 2017-18, made £16 billion from the oil and gas industry, and the UK made £1.3 billion. What do you think they're doing differently? Yeah, one has milked the industry, and the other has stewarded the industry. I mean, that is an absolutely shocking statistic there. Really, what's happened with the industry isn't the oil price, because they've also had the same oil price drop in Norway. And yet they haven't had anything like the issues of Aberdeen. Why? Because they invested for a rainy day, because they took care of volatility, and because they didn't decide not to charge oil companies tax for 2 or 3 years, which is exactly what Westminster did. Can you think of any other sector where your commodity price drops through the floor and then the government turns around and says you don't need to pay tax anymore? That would be good, wouldn't it? It didn't even happen for Scottish oil and gas services firms, many of whom went to the wall, because although the big oil companies were given corporate tax breaks to go and look for more oil for the future, etc., and got tax rebates, the smaller £5 to £20 million Scottish services, Scottish owned headquartered companies, actually went under when the industry stopped spending money with them. Nobody helped them out. You know, there's a philosophy at play there. It's not about the oil price. Another reason is that this headline from the Sunday Herald grabbed me several years ago, How London is Bleeding Scotland Dry, a research report. And I'm from the northeast of England, originally from, born in Scotland, of Scottish parents, but brought up in Hexham and Northumberland. And as a Northumbrian, and that's how I identify myself as a Northumbrian Scot, I look at Northumberland and think they don't have anyone fighting for them. They've got it worse than Scotland does. And my brother-in-law is a Cumbrian and feels exactly the same. We have a situation where the entire economy of the United Kingdom is predicated on the London bubble, and it's not just Scotland, it's not just Wales and Northern Ireland, it's actually a lot of the English regions that are suffering as well from this. This is a piece of research on European economic regions, and as you can see, each of these countries there, the blue spot is the capital city, and the pink spots are the other major industrial regions. If you look look at Germany and Italy, you can see that the capital cities are not the richest regions. If you look at London, you can see that it's actually, other than Belgium, it's considerably richer than everywhere else compared to the rest of the country. You can actually assume that Brussels has a little bit of an advantage there by something being dropped right in the middle of it. But if you actually then take the centre of London, the actual city itself, you actually realise that the wealth there compared to the other regions of the UK is absolutely extraordinary. So the effect of bleeding the rest of the country dry that I've talked about is actually just as bad between the poorest and the richest parts of London itself. Surely that cannot survive. That is not a model. I did a lot of work in Dubai a few years ago, and I just went, this isn't going to work long term, and it's had its problems. And I predict the same problems for London going forward. This is an old piece of research, and if you look at it, it actually says Theresa May's hard Brexit plan, and I left this in particular, because we've got a transition period, and at the end of 2020, we actually have to do a load of trade deals. There's no time to do one big trade deal, a CETA-style trade deal, etc. There's going to be lots of little trade deals, and every single time the EU wants to do a trade deal, they're going to say, can we get Scottish fishing rights? You know, they're going to be the first thing that goes. But actually, we've just had Javid say that there's going to be no alignment in safety standards, et cetera, et cetera. Well, if that's true, you can't do a trade deal between now and the end of the year, and we're going to hard Brexit at the end of 2020. That's shocking. And then the stuff that we were warning about Theresa May's plan of 80,000 jobs actually, think about the people in Scotland, 80,000 jobs in Scotland could be lost as a result of a hard Brexit, and we cannot guarantee it's not going to happen. And that's one of the reasons that a lot of undecided people on independence are actually saying, I can't make my mind up yet because there might be some good trade deals. They're going to get a shock this year, and it's quite interesting how that will play within the independence movement. So finally, the accounting trick. What is the thing that actually does the most amount of damage to Scotland's economy? It's actually the lack of investment in Scotland's economy. If you actually look at GERS, you'll see which GERS is the accounts for Scotland as part of the UK. It includes a share of the UK's expenditure, which has nothing to do with Scotland. And the biggest piece of that I can find is public sector debt interest. Because the public sector debt, the sovereign debt of the UK, has been building up over the years. And if you actually go back and look at Scotland and its surpluses, especially in the 70s, as far back as records go, you'd actually find that the thing that actually put Scotland into debt was paying the UK's debt when we were in surplus. If we'd kept those surpluses, we'd be far better off. So Scotland actually never needed any debt if you look at our economy independently from the rest of the UK, and yet we somehow managed to have about 3.8 to 4.1 billion, it sort of moves, debt interest, and yet we didn't need any debt. How do we pay billions and billions and billions of pounds every year for something that we never needed? And if you look at defence there, we talk about the independence saving and defence, getting rid of nuclear weapons, etc. Debt interest, which is somebody else's debt that we're helping to pay off, is bigger than defence, and has been and is every year. It's the last 4 years. So we took a look at the actual economy as GERS says, and it admits that they were up to 30 billion surpluses then, etc. And then when we get up to the crash, etc., we can see that it tells us that Scotland's actually generating quite a deficit. Now remember, the UK is generating quite a deficit. The debt of the UK has not actually come down. It's just the annual deficit isn't as bad as it was before. If indeed you think deficits are bad, that's a political conversation to be had. But actually, the way they've done that is they've actually just stopped spending in, especially councils, on essential services, on the health service, etc. But actually, if you say, well, what happened to those? We didn't just, if those hadn't been given to the Treasury, if those billions and billions were actually invested in Scotland, then surely our economy would have actually grown. But actually, we don't know what we would have spent those on, so it's very difficult to actually project what would have happened if we had spent that money in Scotland. What we can do is we can say, what is the stupidest thing that we could ever possibly have done with that money? If our government in an independent Scotland were so stupid they just went, we don't know what to do with this 30 billion surplus this year, we don't know, it's just building up, what are we going to do? Well, stick it in a bank account and don't touch it. And if we'd done that, we'd actually find that our economy right now would be over 500 billion better off than it is according to GERS. About 540 billion, I think it is. So it's quite incredible that if we'd actually just put it in the bank and gained the actual rate of interest on the money, not invested in our economy, not necessarily put in a sovereign wealth fund, not bought and sold shares, but actually just put it in the bank and got the interest of the day, then Scotland would be one of the world's richest nations right now. However, if at the point that Norway started, and Norway has produced 1% less oil and gas than us, well, than the UK, if at the time that Norway started investing in its oil fund, if we'd actually copied Norway, then actually we would be, the gap between where we would be now and where Ger says is almost £1 trillion. £1 trillion. Can you imagine if you and your workmates and your families were brought up in a country and we're living now in a country that was £1 trillion more wealthy than it currently is? I'm an economist, I can hardly imagine it. You know, it probably looks a bit like Norway, to be honest. You know, with massive, not the worst pension fund, but the best pension fund in the world. And so this we call debt loading or the accounting trick. But that's not the end of it, because there is also, the Croydon factor, which is that the Prime Minister famously once said that a pound spent in Croydon is worth more to the Scottish economy than a pound spent in Strathclyde. Not quite sure why he said Strathclyde rather than Glasgow. Strathclyde's an ancient kingdom. I think he's still thinking about that, or the old council that's now defunct. But that is their view, that basically there's no point in spending in Scotland. You don't get a return for it. It's not true, because their entire economy is based on the money that Scotland's actually given the UK. And you know what? That would be fair enough. If people say, but you voted for, you had a chance to vote for independence. Yes, but they told us we couldn't afford it. It would have been fair enough if they'd been admitting this and said, but let's be better together. It's them that's better together, not us. But you know what? If they'd just argued that case and we'd voted not to become independent, that would have been fair enough. But they didn't say that. They lied to the people of Scotland over and over again. So, the campaign so far, what have we done? Essentially, I didn't want to come to you tonight and say, hey, we're going to launch something, or we're going to go around Scotland talking to you about what you want us to do. We've done that. The time for talking is over. The time for campaigning and converting people and actually finding out what people want to know about independence has started. There's going to be an independence referendum. Could it be this year? Potentially, still it could be, but it's probably fairly doubtful. Is it definitely going to be next year? Far more likely. But we've got to start campaigning now, so as if it is this year, we're fit and ready to win it. And if it doesn't happen this year, we'll just keep on campaigning. And instead of getting it to 55%, we'll start at 60 next time round. We've got the opportunity to do that. So we started the campaign. First of all, we did the Scotland the Brief quiz. How many of you have done the Scotland the Brief quiz? Yeah. Keep your hand up if your score was more than 5. Keep your hand up if it was more than 6. More than 7. Now hold on a minute, you're on the Board of Business for Scotland, I'd expect you to get a 7. He read the book first. The only people who got 10, I'm telling you now, I've checked, did it 2 or 3 times. The average score was 3, and the most interesting comments we got back were actually from independent supporters, and about 90% of them said, I thought I knew the answer, but then I thought I couldn't be right, and I guessed low. Fascinating. You can all see that. A lot of you did that. You can see that. Even independent supporters are actually not immune to the propaganda about our economy. So 48,000 people now have actually done this quiz. And it was about 5,000 yesterday. It had a big jump. For some reason, I need to go online and find out who tweeted yesterday. So, and say thank you to them. But we've actually been have the campaign running right across Scotland. We've given 65 local Yes groups a starter pack with thousands of leaflets, mugs, not thousands of mugs, but some mugs, copies of the book, etc. And what we did is we gave it to them for free. It cost us £7,000, but we got a grant from the Scottish Independence Foundation, one of our partner organisations, to cover half the cost of that, or slightly bit more than that. And that allowed us to do that. And we're actually going to give out another 30 to 40 starter packs to get Yes groups started. Some some yes groups are saying we don't actually have a yes group anymore. So we've given them a starter pack and said use this as the linchpin to get going. And they've started delivering leaflets and they've started doing street work. But the thing about it is that this is a quality product. The big book costs £7.50. The small ones, £3.50. They've got ISBN numbers. You can get them in bookshops. I'm going to sell them to independent bookshops, independent supporting bookshops. Not Amazon, because they don't pay their taxes. But actually what we're doing is we're giving them a load free, but then a load for next to nothing, really, just cost and a little bit more to independence groups. They can buy them. And then if you want a copy of this, don't buy it from us. Buy it from your local independence group for £3.50, and we're funding the local independence groups. We're not asking people to give us money for this particular thing. We wanted to get started and give people an opportunity to fund the campaigns locally. And that's been absolutely key. The campaign's been going across Scotland. Cheer if you actually got a photograph up here, if you recognise someone on them. These photographs are from, hey, Central. I think, am I right in thinking that's Women for Independence Edinburgh? No, who's it? Musselburgh. Right, sorry. Hey. Helensburgh. Ish, ish, ish. So right across the country, and people have been campaigning, and the feedback we've been getting from the streets is great. People are saying, wow, we didn't actually understand all these facts. Today somebody was telling me that he's actually left a copy in his toilet, and when his guests come and they go to the toilet, they come out and they're in there for half an hour at a time. They come out and they go, do you know, I didn't actually know all of this. Maybe not the most hygienic way to convert people. And this is our leaflet. We've already distributed 80,000 of these, and this is the launch of the campaign. So pre-launch, we've distributed 80,000. We've got orders for about 100,000, 120,000 more. If you run a yes group, you can order some from us, and we'll get an even cheaper price and actually get those out. I ran this past a very, very senior politician who's been in the game for 30 years, and he told me this is the most impactful political leaflet he's ever seen in his entire life. We have shown this to people who've instantly gone, I didn't know any of this, I've changed my mind. But what it does is it moves people one slot along the scale of 1 to 10. One, sometimes two. When we've actually said to people who've read the mini book already, we got them to give us feedback on that. And we asked people, when before you read the mini book, where were you on a scale of 1 to 10? And then we said, afterwards, where were you on a scale of 1 to 10? And actually what we found was that people said they were moving on average two places along the scale for reading the book. So if they started at 10, they started to have doubts about the union. If they started at 6 or 7, they're now becoming independent supporters. So if they started at 7, we're now seeing them coming along and volunteering to help with our campaigns. And that is the slow process, but it is definitely happening. We also have the Believe in Scotland Independence Ambassador campaign. We launched it under the Business for Scotland brand, but it was always going to be this. These are events in Perth, and that would be Kirk and... I better get it right now, Kirk and Tillich. in Kirk and Tillich. And this one is Aberdeen. So we've been holding these events across Scotland. We've got 600 people now trained. These are 600 people who, when we hold an event and invite in your area, and we invite 100 undecided people to our events, we're going to have 20 highly trained ambassadors. Every single table, every few seats, is going to be somebody who knows how to have a conversation without getting angry, without arguing. The key thing we tell them is never confuse winning an argument with convincing someone to support independence, because quite often the opposite is true. And it's about questioning, it's about understanding people's questions. So now I'm going to stop talking, because you've heard enough from me for now. And I was going to say about the ambassador program. We have 3.5 hours of face-to-face training and about 10 hours of online training as part of that program. And the next two face-to-face ambassador training events will be in March. The first one's in Dundee on the 8th, and the second one is in Edinburgh at Summer Hall. It's the Chamber of Commerce in Dundee and Edinburgh Summer Hall the week after. So we're starting to do the face-to-face events again. I hope a lot of you will be able to get involved with that. But what I wanted to do was stop saying, hi, I'm Gordon from Business for Scotland, this is my book, etc., and say, okay, So let's talk to people who are actually on the streets, who've actually had these conversations with people who are handing out leaflets and selling books, etc. So I've asked four of them just to give us a couple of minutes and tell us what's happening in their area and give a little pitch for their area. So Jack from the Aberdeen Independence Movement.
My name's Jack. I'm the media coordinator for the Aberdeen Independence Movement and the president of the Aberdeen University Scottish National Association. What we've seen, and what I'm sure you've all seen as well, is the importance that the economic argument is going to make in winning independence. So we've seen in our stalls and we've seen on doors that many people tell us that they really want to see an independent Scotland. They want to believe in an independent Scotland. But unfortunately, they just don't see the economic argument. They think that there's nobody we could possibly afford it. So we think that the Scotland the Brief book is incredibly good at explaining that to them, and we think that the wider Believe in Scotland campaign does a very, very good job of doing that. We think that the materials package up the arguments that we need to make in a very concise way. We quite like the fact that you can see that it's quite eye-catching, and it's just short statements that explain very, very clearly exactly what we're trying to say. It's simple without being insulting, which we think is essential for the group that we're trying to target. We like the fact that the information is trustworthy, so it's very, very transparent where the information comes from. Because just generally, we've seen from our campaigning that if you try to make a political argument to somebody, if you try to explain some sort of policy to somebody, the response you always get is that they don't believe it. They don't believe in politicians, they don't believe in these institutions. However, we can actually pick up the Maxi book and we can point to a source and say exactly where something came from. We think that regardless of when we have a campaign, the Believe in Scotland campaign and the Scotland the Brief book are going to be essential tools in achieving independence. Because ultimately, we need to get that group of people with us. We need to bring them with us to yes. Because if we do not bring the group of people who may be ideological, who might be ideologically optimistic about Scotland, but economically uncertain of what we can achieve, if we bring them with us to yes, we will win. So to win independence, we must help these people believe in Scotland. Thank you.
Karen from Edinburgh, North and Leith.
Hi, I'm Karen, I'm from Leith. I just wanted to say, the hashtag Believe in Scotland, unfortunately, alas, as an independence campaigner, I find that a lot of people don't believe in Scotland, especially older people, to be frank. And quite often the standard response is, aye, but alas, can't he afford it? And, you know, I've been really frustrated by that. And when I really started campaigning seriously, I felt like, oh, of course we can afford it, but actually didn't really have hard statistics on it. And I've just finished a life sciences degree at Dundee University, so I was really interested in having real hard data on, you know, what's happening economically in Scotland. And I just want to just insert this fact that life sciences in Dundee, before I went there, I had no idea how successful Dundee University is. The life sciences department in Dundee is held above MIT in America, and that's a country with 350 odd million people, and we've got five, you know. So, you know, we are punching above our weight in life sciences. I think, you know, so Business for Scotland have done the hard work, they've done the legwork, and they've produced the hard data about our clever, creative and prosperous country in an accessible, eye-catching and bite-sized form. The Believe in Scotland mugs, I think, provide the activists with a friendly, warm drink-holding indie stealth tool to leave in your shared crockery cupboard in your workplace. And I have done this. I never use the mug, but lots of people do. So I'm hoping they're getting the message. Hopefully, when the app is launched, that will allow us to carry the information around about with us on the move. And for me, the Maxi book provides all the references to solidify the positive assertions that we as activists make about Scotland. So Gordon, his clever Glasgow team, and Stuart Bremner, who did the illustrations, also from Leith, created a fantastic... Yay! They've created a fantastic campaigning tool which brings the seemingly secret talents of our country out into the open. So as convener of Yes Edinburgh North and Leith, I would like to thank Gordon, his team and Stuart for providing the tools to make us go forward with increased confidence. And so let's get started and campaign for an independent and socially just Scotland.
Siobhan from Yes Dundee and Angus.
It's actually Imagine Scotland. I'm in Dundee though. Some of the work that we do is actually deliberately seeking out non-Yes voters, and we kind of tend to work on the notion of the Citizens' Assembly and kind of pose the question, what do you want from Scotland's future? So get people to think on a kind of very personal level of what they want for themselves, what they want for their communities, and effectively what they want from Scotland. One of the things that we find is that, especially with Brexit, there is a deep uncertainty and a fear amongst the undecideds at the moment. It's fine for us. I feel really blessed, actually, personally, because I know that Scotland's going to be okay. You know, I can believe in that kind of process of how we're going to move forward. But, you know, I'm a kind of hardened Yes supporter, so I have that deep-seated faith. For those that are undecided, it's a very, very different thing, and there's fear. There's two choices that we have to make. I mean, Brexit has forced us to make this choice. There's two choices. We either remain part of the UK, or we either become independent. Now, for undecideds, and for undecideds that are slightly fair, for better, want of a better word, it's a difficult decision to make. One of the things that we try and do is try and instill a confidence in the people's own faith in themselves, but actually in the faith in their own communities, in their faith in our own Scotland. And I think this is where Business for Scotland, actually the Scotland Debrief campaign, comes in. I'm going to say firstly, just the colour scheme I think is beautiful. Well done, Stuart. I think it's absolutely amazing. And it gives a modernity and a forward kind of thinking in terms of a Scottish future, which I think is really, really important. It takes us away from the past and starts to get us to move forward and think in terms of how our future can be. But I think the economic case in the way the kind of Scotland Brief is working is it gives a solidity and it gives a confidence for people who are not sure of where we're going to go now. And I think that's really, really important at this stage. I think because of Brexit almost is because it's lent a kind of fear in people. They kind of feel like they're jumping into the abyss. We're moving into an economic abyss if we're going to a hard Brexit. There's no doubt about that. But for the notion of independence, it's kind of feeling of stuck between a rock and a hard place kind of sometimes. But if we can start talking about the resources that we got, and I was blown away when I started reading some of that stuff. We've got 25% of Europe's wind potential, for instance. That's absolutely awesome. And it's part of our future as well in terms of building an economic future. It's the stability, I think, that people and undecideds are looking for. And I think the economic case in the Scotland Debrief actually give that solid base to build from and give people a confidence in themselves and the decision that they're going to make, but also the Scotland's economic case. It's just the political will that we need now. We've got the economic solidity, it's the political will.
Thank you very much. And right across Scotland, independence groups are out there campaigning with these materials, and that just makes my day, really. One time it didn't make my day was when we got two orders for 500 books on the same day. You'd think that was a good thing, but our volunteer driver said, "Don't worry, I'll make sure, I'll take the books." He said, "Who's ordered them?" And I said, "Aberdeen Independence Movement in Dumfriesshire and Dumfriesshire for Yes." We're not a small country, you know that, don't you? So that's what we've done already. So there's people, the front page of the National this week said, let's have a talking shop, let's have a convention, let's just go out there and talk to people and start winning this thing, because it's time to start winning. We don't need to wait for the politicians to tell us, oh, the referendum will be on this day. There's a different way to look at this. We can actually go out there, move people towards independence, so when it gets to 55%, we can say this is the date we want the referendum. And they'll thank us for it. We have got this to win this time, and we've started this campaign because we believe the time is right. So I want to finish by telling you about the campaign that we're actually already running and what we're going to do next, or at least some of what we're going to do next. You could even go on your phones right now and you could look at our new Believe in Scotland website. It's just launched today. It's still sort of in beta mode, but it's got articles on there. It's got a video which you should look at on the far left there. You'll see, because the sound still isn't working on the video, I don't think you're going to hear it when I play it later on. So go there and have a look at the video tonight on your way home, etc. What's key about this? This was carried forward, the sort of the branding, etc. But it's not about preaching, it's not about politics, there's no politicians involved in the Believe in Scotland campaign. It actually asks people who turn up, it is what are your questions about Scottish independence? And that's the key thing. We're looking to engage, we're looking to have conversations, we're looking to get people to honestly tell us what their concerns and worries are so as we can answer those questions. And we call them IndieFAQs, hashtag IndieFAQs. And as you can see, we've already answered a few of the most frequently asked questions about independence. 2.5 minute reads, facts, links to prove that we're telling the truth, no objective, no politics in there, no mentions of what we think of Gordon Brown or anything like that, like we sometimes do in Business for Scotland, just the facts. And people, we believe, will engage with those facts on a much deeper level. And it's really all about engagement, because when you actually click on a blog or when you want to go look at a blog, we're actually saying, what questions do you have about independence? We're challenging people to actually ask us their questions on independence over and over again. And they put the answers in there, and then we will actually email them when we've got the answer for them. And if we've already done it, we'll just send them an email straight away, but we'll keep telling them when the new FAQ blogs come out. There's also a second site though, and that site is called Supporting Believe in Scotland, and that's a site for activists to log on. As you can see, it's a little bit simpler. There is the opportunity for supporters to donate, to participate. There's a list of events on there. There's also a list of events to engage undecided people, etc. It lists the rally, our own ambassador programs, any group that's got an event, just fill in the form on the website, tell us about it and we'll promote it. We're going to spend a lot of money promoting this website, and the ambassador program from Learn, or multiple social media including Instagram, etc. And resources is actually resources for the local Yes groups. You can actually order leaflets and books online, and as we add more and more leaflets, you can get those there. And we've also got online communities for campaigners as well. The whole idea of this came from the 30 or so talks that I gave last year, when I was actually told again and again by groups that we want to campaign, we just don't have anyone coordinating anything. We want to campaign, we don't have materials to give out. We knock the doors and we're having the same conversations we had in 2014. Someone has to give us something new. So I started saying, okay, well, we're going to look into doing that. And everyone said, great. And after about 10 to 15 meetings, it was actually in Aberdeen, I said, you know what? We're going to do this. We're going to launch a national campaign. We're going to not take control of the Yes movement. We're not going to be Yes Scotland, God forbid. What we're going to do is we're actually going to create an organisation that supports you, the local activists, that says, what do you need to win in your area? Because there's no way to win an independence campaign through politics and adverts and newspapers. The only way we're going to do it is at the grassroots level, because it's the only thing that ever has moved the independence vote. And you need our support, so we're going to give you our support. We're going to do explainer videos as well. And I put this up because actually nobody in my staff has ever seen me without a beard. It's not a pretty sight, is it? This was during the EU referendum campaign. I think this particular video got 27,000 views, and the research from it was given a whole full page in The Sun, and it was used by the Remain campaign in Scotland, etc. But I thought I'd grab that for a particular reason, because there are only three post-Brexit trading choices: the Norwegian deal, the Swiss deal, or the Canadian deal. How true is that still to this day, and they haven't yet figured it out? And we said that before the referendum. There's nothing hard about Brexit, ladies and gentlemen. The day after the Brexit vote, David Cameron could have phoned up the EU and said, oh, tell you what, we fancy a Canadian CETA-style deal or a Norway deal. No, let's go for the Norway one. Send the paperwork over, I'll sign it on Thursday. That's how easy it is to leave the EU. What you can't do is go, we want all the advantages of being in the EU, we're not going to pay you anymore, and we're not going to pay our bills. That's what's hard about Brexit. We're also going to run events across Scotland. We want to, and this is where we will talk to local groups, what events do you need? Who can we put on a panel? Can we actually get 100 undecideds to an event and sit them down with our ambassadors and our local groups and actually convert people right across the country? Can we run hundreds of town hall events before a referendum's called? Well, Brexit puts it back on the radar. Brexit allows us a chance to do this. Once Brexit's happened, people are going to want to come along and they want to get clarity on what it is we're planning for Scotland. We're not just thinking in terms of let's get some leaflets out there. We're not just thinking we've got some good messages. What we're thinking is let's actually analyse the data. Let's just see what is changing. Now here we've got some work done by my research team looking at the NDRF 2014. That's not a pretty sight with no majorities right across Scotland. And then you look at general election 2019 and we looked at the people voting for independent supporting parties, and you can see there's actually been significant movement. Several areas, especially in the central belt, moving significantly towards Yes and also Skye and Harris and places like that. Then we took a look at the areas where there's a lot of undecided people, and we can actually see that the polls are telling us there are lots of areas that haven't gone blue yet, but where people are undecided, where they're not sure. And we've been mapping that. There's a lot of areas now where there's no clear majority whatsoever for yes or no in Scotland. And then we look at the swing to yes from 2014 to 2019 from the opinion data we've got, and actually map on top of that who voted to remain in the EU and who is the strongest voters to remain in the EU. And what this does is it actually allows us as a campaigning organisation to map out on a regional basis and by town and city what messages will work where. We know what posters to put where, what billboards to put out, what leaflets to drop into certain towns, but if we work with you, we'll know which estates to drop particular leaflets into. And that level of targeting hasn't actually been tried from a Yes campaign before, but we've got the data and we're working on it. The city of Edinburgh here is actually not moving towards Yes as fast as we think, but it's actually a huge EU. So if a hard Brexit happens, then there might be an opportunity there. So what sort of message might you play in Edinburgh to persuade people? Although some people are telling me that I'm sure Leith is moving very quickly, isn't it? Yes. About Morningside, I'm told, is an area that was so solidly no that is actually now cracking. The people are moving several spots along that. They're not necessarily saying yes yet, but they're getting there. So we can actually map that. If we work with local activists, we can collect that data. And how do we collect that data? So there's a bill poster that we're working on right now that might work in Edinburgh. It's very difficult. I've been working in marketing for a long time. It's very difficult to put economics bill posters up. Have great looking hair is really easy. Economics a little bit more difficult. So we're trying to have a bit of fun with the message. So we're going to put an app out there, and the first app will be the Scotland Debrief app. And the Scotland Debrief app will have instant access to the quiz from your mobile phone when you're in the pub. And we're actually finding that half the people, there's a lot more people looking at the quiz than doing the quiz because they're skimming through it to actually get the answers to win arguments. So we're putting it in the pocket. And people used to say, well, Gordon, if only I had you. And the fact that it was Ian used to always say, if only I had you in the pub with me last Friday night. Well, now you can have me in the pub with you every Friday night. And I'm not just talking about the phone on your phone either. So basically, this is all the content that you'll actually get in stage one of Scotland Debrief. So you can find the information you need to actually say, well, actually, can I just show you this? Can I just tell you that actually I'm not entirely sure you're right. Let's look it up. And it'll be there at your fingertips, anything you need to know. This is quite interesting, actually, because so 90% of households consume rice and all rice is imported. And there's a great meme on Facebook that says all the things you're going to lose, and it's got French cheeses and wines and all these sort of things, and it says the only thing you can eat after Brexit is baked beans. Not all baked beans are imported. You're not even going to have baked beans. And it's these sort of things that we talk about in the book that actually, yes, it's a smile on people's face, but it's actually a very serious issue there. So basically, the app on stage one will give you all the content from the book, but we've got a second stage app. And the second stage app has survey facility on it. It will have mapping facilities on it. It will help you plan your routes to deliver leaflets. It will deliver the data from the analysis we're doing to tell you what leaflets to drop in what towns, etc. You then go in and actually collect data from people, and you can actually say, you can have a conversation on the doorstep, tell us your concerns. If you're an ambassador, you'll know how to get to those concerns past the, I don't like Nicola Sturgeons. We teach people to work their way around that because nobody ever didn't vote for independence because they didn't like a single politician. We teach people to work their way around that, and you can collect the data and you can say, well, do you mind? There's three things here that you're concerned about. I can tell you now one or two things that I know about it, but why don't I just actually get you those answers emailed to you? You can collect their email and hit the button, and before you've left their doorstep, they'll have an email with the answers to the three biggest concerns. Of course, that data then feeds back to us, and we're now collecting data on every concern in every town in Scotland, and we know what messages play where better, etc. And therefore, we can win with that sort of level of data, and we're going to give this app free to the independence movement. It's going to cost us £25,000 to actually develop. So I'm going to finish with just a quick statement, which is that I may have told all of you that we were going to win in 2014, but in my heart of hearts, I never really thought we were. There was a brief moment at the count in Glasgow when we were winning every single council ward, and then I had 28 people at counts across Scotland. They started phoning me and telling me what was happening elsewhere, and there was that one moment where I just thought, oh, maybe we're going to do it. But we started way too low to actually win. What we are now going to do is we're going to start, I believe, when the next campaign is launched, we'll be at 55% minimum, and Brexit is going to help us do that. So essentially, I now feel it in my bones. We can do this. We've got this. We just need to start now. We just need to start holding conversations across Scotland. We just need to start campaigning, because they have nothing. Every argument they had, every bit of scaremongering can now be debunked. And this is just ourselves. There are lots of other groups, lots of other national groups, lots of other local groups. If we work together and coordinate, if we help you and then you help us, then we've got this. And we're going to win. And I feel that in my bones. Thank you very much.
Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime.